everyone, and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 168. This week, we're going to have a short little episode with just myself, me, Melissa, and sitting next to me is Mr. Pete. How are you?
Hello there.
This week, the two of us, we got to have an advanced screening of Toy Story 4, so we're going to give our little spoiler-free thoughts about it, not to go into too much about the plot or anything like that, but we'll kind of discuss that. And yesterday, we had a great experience over at Universal Islands of Adventure in Orlando. We got to ride Hagrid's roller coaster, or more specifically, Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure.
Trademarked.
Not a very short title, but a title.
That's in line with everything that Harry Potter's ever done, like from their movies to the attractions. It's always been a mouthful.
Well, I mean, Forbidden Journey's not too much of a mouthful.
It's Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey.
Oh, really? Okay, never mind then. I take it all
like,
back.
Like, to the letter, that is the actual... I'm pretty sure it's actually that whole thing.
All right. Okay, so those are the two things we're going to talk about, so it'll be a nice short episode. But before I get into all that, I have to tell you that this episode, just like every episode, is brought to you by MEI-Travel. Whether you want to go to Disney World and experience some new things there, or head on over to Universal Orlando and experience Harry Potter both in Islands of Adventure and in Universal Studios, they have an amazing, amazing themed lands and, you know, some fun stuff all around those parks. You definitely head over to MEI-Travel, and Becky and her team can get you started on whichever magical adventure you decide to choose. We are lastgenpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod. That's D-I-S, Magic Hour Pod. We're on Facebook. We have a Disney Magic Hour group that you can come on in, join with your friends, have a fun discussion. And we are on Instagram at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. So you can find all of our stuff there, all of our pictures, all of our weekend adventures. We also do put our show up on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Spotify, everywhere that pretty much you can find a podcast, we are there. I'm assuming that's how you found us now. And head over, give us a 5-star review. We have one today that I'll read before the end of the episode from one of our wonderful listeners. So if you leave a 5-star review, I will also read it, mostly on iTunes, because I haven't even seen if Google can do that. I will look into that. Okay, let's start off. Yesterday morning, we had an adventure. We decided, for some odd reason, to get into Universal early. Now, Hagrid's opened up on Thursday, but since we were working, we figured we'll just wait till the weekend. We don't have to take off of work for all that stuff. We'll get to it eventually. So we decided to do it Saturday morning. We went with our friends, Steph and Josh. Steph is a huge Harry Potter fan, so I know that she's been like itching to get to this attraction. Thankfully, her and Josh were able to join us. Everyone was asking how long the wait is. So I'm going to lay out a little bit of our morning and how it went. Because there was the whole, you know, stories that were hit within the first 2 days of a 10-hour, you know, queue. Very possible that was during opening day and the day after. But on Saturday, it was, for us, not that experience, thankfully. We got to Universal Studios at about 6:15 a.m.
When 6:30.
Okay, 6:30.
6:30 is when we pulled up and... we basically just parked in front of the gate.
Yeah, we parked in front of the gate. They didn't have, the gates open, so everyone was just lining up and kind of waiting until they opened so we can park. They opened about 7 o'clock.
Yeah, just about.
And we parked, went to Islands of Adventure. While we stood outside of Islands of Adventure, they were making the announcement that the park was not going to be open till 9, so... We were like, all right, I don't know how much you're going to have 2 hours of people waiting, but you never know. They definitely were making the announcement that Universal Studios was having the early morning hours, whatever they call it there. But Islands of Adventure opening at 9. Come about 7:30, they turn the fans on by the ticket gates. And
turnstiles,
thank you. And there was a bunch of team members up there. So we were like, all right, I don't know if they're going to wait till 9 to let us in. And lo and behold, at about like between 8 and 8:10, they let us into the park. They had a really good system of this is where you queue for Hagrid's. You started out immediately. You just walked to the left and they had you walk the entire length.
Well, yeah, let's get real specific about this. So once you enter Islands of Adventure, My worry with a new park and everything is that you're basically going to have all the turnstiles going, and you're going to have a dozen people plus wide all running towards or rushing towards one specific thing, where it then gets bottlenecked and it becomes a real big mess. So Universal did a really good job of curtailing that by having you right around where the sweet shop was as you're entering Islands of Adventure. The sweet shop is on your right-hand side. Right at that moment, they had team members having people say, okay, go to your left if you want to go to Hagrid's and get in a single file line. So you had the remainder of that entrance to basically get yourself into a single file line. From there, you single filed from, you know, the first steps of Seuss Landing,
yeah,
all the way around backstage, like normally where you're never going to go in the future.
Well, actually, counterpoint to that, we went down around the lake for Seuss Landing. We crossed the bridge, went into the Mythos Island part. This is where I thought it was interesting, and we even talked about it. You went into the queue for the Poseidon adventure.
Yeah.
And man, I have never seen all of that queue. But let me tell you, yesterday I saw all of that queue because they let us in at 8. The park didn't open till 9. They didn't need that queue yet. So that's how they were kind of filtering everybody, keeping us all like in single file or at least queue width. So it wasn't.
But we were even going beyond that. We went back.
Yeah, then after we went through Poseidon, then we kind of went in the emergency exit, went around the show building in the back, kind of like how we were used to doing with like Halloween Horror Nights, where you go behind the show buildings. And then we kind of came out another side of, but still in the mythical land, because I could hear the water fountain.
Yeah, we were actually right at the water fountain.
And then they kind of started
giving out water.
Yes, they had water. Yeah. They had water stations where you could either buy them, or they had, you know, Gatorade tub full of free water with little plastic cups. So it was good because they were kind of prepped and ready for this. And then we had the single file going into Hogsmeade, right past the train that's normally there, the stationary one, not the Hogsmeade Express, but the stationary one. Where the old lockers were for Dueling Dragons, now they had the new locker system at Universal, which I absolutely love. And they were letting people go and put their bags in there before going into the queue.
And to explain, like, the new locker system, if you haven't experienced it yet, you just scan your pass and the door pops open. You don't have to remember which locker number you are. You're just going to scan your pass. It pops right open. And I believe you have an 8-hour time limit on there, or just about 7 hours, because we had to jump back in because I forgot to put my sunglasses away. And after everyone telling me, like, oh no, we're going to have to get a new locker, it said, this expires in 7 hours. So we had more than enough time.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice how, like, it's changed from the old system. You don't have to capture your fingerprint and all that stuff, which is a very, like, long process.
It takes longer. Yeah, this is a quick process. There didn't seem to be that many lockers in there, though.
Well, the thing is, they're very thin. Like, they're not very wide.
Yeah.
So, but they are deep. So if you have thin stuff, you can put it in there. I'm sure there are, like...
But you even had your bag. I mean, like, you had
I had my little crossbody, yeah. So. I didn't have a backpack. Like, that would be my only thing. People who come in with, like, backpacks, I don't know where those go. There must be bigger lockers somewhere, but they did it in Mummy. They did it somewhere else that I can't remember.
Men in Black, yes. Yeah.
And that system, I cannot wait till they put it into Forbidden Journey, because the Forbidden Journey lockers are, like, the nightmare lockers of that place, because everyone's just crowding in there. And it's a nightmare.
Yeah, so if you cut down the time that it takes, it will make a big, big, big improvement over there.
100%. So then you were able to enter Hagrid's. This was still all before 9 o'clock. I think it was about 9:15 we got into that, like, under the archway of, like, Hagrid's.
Just about, yeah.
And then the queue was very similar to the last go-around. You know, you kind of still went through the outside. They added some new stuff in terms of, like, Hagrid's hut with some pumpkins laying around.
So a lot of pumpkins.
Nice fall theme. You then went inside. Was that supposed to be the Hogwarts? Like, I don't know. That was my question. Like, what was that building supposed to be?
I actually don't know.
Because it would look like a castle.
I wasn't too sure of where it was supposed to be specifically. And there's some thunder rolling in the background for added a mood.
Yeah.
The thing with me with this was the only down point almost for the entire experience, was while the outside of the queue looked very cool, once you went inside the queue, it was very similar. I believe it was the same exact layout as it always was with Dueling Dragons. So there's a very large stretch of queue where you're just going through a cave.
Yeah, very low ceilings too, which, yeah. I mean, if you're claustrophobic, it's thin and low. Like, I don't know. I think even Josh said, like, I would not want to be stuck in here for hours.
Yeah.
That would be, I think, a little...
If you were stuck in there for a while, it might not... It probably wouldn't be the most comfortable thing, but they've had the same queue forever. I mean, I'm sure that people have gotten through it before. They should be fine to get through it now. But there's no active interaction in the queue that we got to experience.
Yeah.
There was the one room that was... So if you're a Universal goer, you're aware of Gringotts and the Forbidden Journey.
Mm-hmm.
In Gringotts, you stop in a room that has a digital screen and you see, you know, a scene play out,
mm-hmm.
where it basically breaks up the wait.
Yes.
You know, that's like one of your final stops to getting on the attraction. In Forbidden Journey, there is a couple of scenes like that with Harry and Hermione and all them, but you're kind of walking through the queue as you're watching it.
Yeah.
This seemed more like Gringotts, but that actual film, I don't think they were stopping anyone for it.
No, because
the doors, the double doors that you went into, they were just open.
Yeah, it was like 9:01 when we walked in there. And
yeah.
I think at this point, they just want to get people through the queue.
Yeah, they were just getting people through because they just opened it. So this was more of, it felt like a soft open, even though it isn't, because this room wasn't being used. And all you saw was a digital Fluffy walking back and forth. No, it wasn't even Fluffy.
No, it was just a regular dog. I don't even know.
Here's the greatest news, though. That's the only digital screen you see.
Yeah.
That's it. And that would be my number one positive of everything that I'm going to say in our thoughts on this, is that this attraction does not depend on the digital screens. And why I like that so much, we'll get into when we get to the actual ride itself.
Yeah. The queue had, like, some other, like, cool little parts. There was one part that I guess it was supposed to be, like, not a greenhouse, but... maybe like a storage place, but it had like a really cool look. I remember when we walked in, it was like, ooh, like this really looks pretty. And there was huge eggs like on the shelves.
There were the dragon eggs on the right-hand side. And you can knock on them and they all had a different sound when you knocked on them.
Oh, really?
Well, not as in like a digital sound that played
just
when
like
I knocked on them.
Just like different hollowness?
Yeah, but the hollowness had a different feel on all the, because I knocked on every single damn one of them as we walked by. And I thought that was really cool. I don't know if that was on purpose. It could have just been... the way that, you know, A made this one and B made this one, but they all had their own little sound of, you know, trying to find a beam in the wall, basically. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. And they all were different, like, sizes, shapes, and colors, so it was pretty cool. They had his workshop, a workbench. So, like, there were a couple, like, cool little things to see. This is where I would have liked to be a little bit more, like, a Flight of Passage lab type stuff, where, like, okay, he has, like, containers of glowing things. Like, it would have been cool to see one or two of them move.
Have a little bit of action in that.
But there was a lot to see. And then there was the stables, which is pretty much right before you load into the ride vehicles. And that was kind of cool because up above you, there was like a shadow of Hagrid on his motorbike.
Yeah.
The only thing is, I have no idea what was being said the entire time.
I have no idea what he said the whole time.
Because the room was very loud. Like, people were just very loud. The motorbike itself was very loud. So his voice definitely got lost in all of that.
And even, like, you can say, like, people are loud, but it's a big room.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an echo. Like, it's a massively echoey room. So if anyone was talking, it would have been hard to hear him. So that was – the whole queue is very kind of forgetful for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I will take that every day of the week, because the attraction itself was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. So it was an interesting loader.
But we got to get on the attraction first, because that's a thing to bring up.
Yeah, that's what I want to bring up. It is an interesting loader. So basically, right at the end of the stables, you are told, okay, if you want to go in the sidecar, you are on the left. If you want to ride on the motorbike, you are on the right. It sits two people. Each train sits 14 people. So there's seven, you know, motorbike and sidecars down the row. And you queue up. You figure out between your party who wants to be in the sidecar, who wants to be in the motorbike, and you go along. And basically, it's almost like Forbidden Journey, where there is just a moving walkway that the vehicle pulls up alongside, and you and your party are directed in, you know, very similar to Haunted Mansion, very similar to a lot of...
it's a slow loader.
Yeah, it's a slow loader, which is interesting for a roller coaster to be that.
Never seen that before, personally. Yeah. I'm sure that there are somewhere else, but I personally never saw one. And you would think that this would speed up the process, but in our time that we moved so quickly through most of the ride because it had just opened, we really only faced a line for the very last room.
Yeah, and, for the stable heading into the load part.
But that took about 35, 40 minutes.
Yeah, because...
Which feels much longer than visually you think it would.
Yeah, because we, like I said, we got into that initial room with the screen at 9:01 where we saw the dog. And then by the time that we got off the attraction, it was 9:30, 9:35-ish. So like that whole 35 minutes was that last bit where you were getting... waiting to get through the stables and to get loaded into the machine.
So when I read online, you know, 10-hour wait, you know that those things aren't accurate, but I could definitely see this thing with a full queue being 5 to 6 hours because if it's going to move that slowly, that is going to suck.
Yeah.
So there is a single rider line right now. They will eventually have the express pass working for it, but I mean, I would give that a number of months. And the bigger thing is that it will be getting a virtual queue. They were supposed to start using it on Friday. I spoke to a team member. They said they're not doing it just yet. I checked today on the app. They're not using it today. But they will eventually get a virtual queue, which to use that, you will go onto the Universal app, have your login, to, you know, tie it up with your ticket. And then once you're in the park, you can tap yourself into that virtual queue. You'll get a return time. And then I assume you have a much shortened wait. I don't know how they're going to be doing it at that point. We'll see when it actually launches because I will try it immediately.
Yeah.
Because as much as I enjoyed up, down, left, and right, this attraction, I am frothing at the mouth to see it at night.
Yeah. And that's like one of the things that we always enjoy about roller coasters, no matter if it's, you know, Big Thunder or Everest.
Yeah,
nighttime roller coasters are like the best way to go.
Nighttime theme parks are pretty much the best thing.
Valid, yes, 100%. So yes, experiencing this at night is great. I also enjoy this because similar to the Incredicoaster in Disneyland, like there's moments where you see, you know, certain effects that have lighting, certain you're in certain areas, and having those at night where your eyes don't have to like adjust to a darkened space or anything like that, it's so much better. And I think it really makes the effects even, you know, more impressive.
They pop more.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, more. Definitely to see this at night is my next goal.
So loading into it, I also want to say I'm a pretty agile guy. Well, now anyway, because you know, but I'm about, what, 6'1", 6'1"-ish, now 220. And me getting into the right sidecar, getting into it was fine. But I can see some people having a bit of a struggle and not tripping over over all the little inserts that seem to be in the walk-in space.
Yeah.
And then getting out of that even more so because you're trying to maneuver your body from a seated position up and climbing over. It wasn't really the smoothest thing. Like, I didn't feel like I was going to fall, but I felt like there's a lot of people who are going to fall.
I might trip.
Yeah, like Melissa, like, I'm not saying this, but it's a pretty big thing to climb over.
Yeah, because the way
you
are
shorter than I am by a bunch, and I could see you, you know, just clipping your foot a little bit or something like that.
Yeah, because the way it loads is really interesting. I did think that this was a very odd decision just from like my day job liability issues. You have to step in the sidecar and then step to the motorbike and then do the opposite when you're getting off. Climb off the motorbike, step into the sidecar, step onto the moving walkway. So like if you are nervous, if you're in a rush, if you're not careful, if you're not watching where you're going, and the footprint for the sidecar is not like really big. So even if you have big feet,
like, it's not large.
You might have like a little bit of an interesting way to maneuver to get in. And the fact that it is a continuous loader, it can put a little bit more pressure on you to be like, okay, I got to get in on this thing. And they don't do that. They give you plenty of time, but it just might feel that way in the beginning. So it is a very interesting, you know, loading process.
So I wasn't sure if it was taking longer to get on when we were waiting, you know, in the the room where you have Hagrid riding above you, because people were getting a little delayed and they had to slow down the track to get people on and off. I'm not sure if that's what it was. Again, we'll find out more as this ride exists a little bit more. And then when you ride the attraction, you see how much other technology is going on. And then you wonder, oh, well, is that what's holding it up? You know, is everything clicking into place? Because there's some really, really crazy things that happen on this attraction.
Yeah.
I'm almost hesitant to talk about it because what made it so great for me was that I had no idea what was going to happen. I didn't watch any videos. I don't like doing that.
Yeah.
And going in totally blind made everything utterly surprising. I knew one piece of it, but the other thing that happens, I don't know. I guess we have to talk about it.
I mean, I don't know. I think we can leave it, because if you are, you know, worried about spoilers or you don't want to know what's going on, I think that's a good thing. Like you said, we didn't know what was going on, and I think that made the experience really great.
When we talk about
it,
I'll just tell someone, like, fast forward two minutes.
Because,
I have to talk about it.
Okay, I can legitimately say, like, this attraction is like nothing I've ever experienced, and I think that is the best thing. So if it is something that you don't want to know about, definitely skip like the next 2 to 3 minutes, just because we'll talk.
Well, hold off on that just a second.
Okay.
I wanted to throw in why I think it's so good, and it's also related to the rest of the Universal experience.
Okay.
The last three attractions that we have gotten from Universal have been Kong, Fast and the Furious, and Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, it went Kong, Jimmy Fallon, and Fast and Furious, like, in chronological order, with Fast and Furious being the most recent.
Kong, I didn't think was very good when I first wrote it, and I've only warmed up to it semi-recently because the other two were so terrible that, look, I know I do say it jokingly, but this actually did happen. Like, this is the real turn of events. Fallon and Fast and the Furious were so bad that they made a very average Kong experience a little better, unless you're on the left side of Kong because you can see everything, like where the screen ends, whatever. We'll get into that another, that's another thing. The other thing was that I thought that Gringotts, Escape from Gringotts, was a giant step backwards from what they did on Forbidden Journey. Forbidden Journey is a lot of practical effects with actual things that they created, and it was really exciting. And then Gringotts is The Mummy minus the fire effects and the animatronics.
And the speed, even, because there's a lot of times in Gringotts where it pauses and stops, and I'm like, no, I wanna keep going.
Yeah.
I want more thrill.
So I think Gringotts was a big step backwards, or a big, you know, step to the side. It just didn't do anything. It was just a retread of The Mummy with less effects and a ton of screens. It's just all screens. And the roller coaster part of it is not really, it's nothing spectacular or unique either. Again, it's the same thing as The Mummy.
Mm-hmm.
So going into this, brand new roller coaster, but what do you do with a roller coaster? I guess is really the question that everyone who's building a roller coaster in one of these parks is asking themselves nowadays.
Which is going in at least two other parks that we know of. So.
Yeah, so getting on this, the question was, what's going to make this different than just, you know, Dueling Dragons Part 2 with a couple of Hagrid nods.
Mm.
And man, oh man, did they totally answer that question in ways that I never thought. I didn't even know there was a thing. I just didn't know it was a thing. So now, if you don't want to know the events that happen on the ride, and we have to be really careful what this time was.
Okay.
We're going to talk about two specific events that happen. And fast forward like 3 to 4 minutes. Let's just give ourselves 3 to 4 minutes. On your podcast, okay?
And I'll specify, I'll put it in the show notes as well, just to, for if you really want to be accurate.
So, okay. So going on the ride, it's got a great, you know, I forget what the term is, linear induction or something like that. But basically, you know, the part that speeds you up. It is the smoothest acceleration I have ever felt in a roller coaster. There's no pull chain technology chugging you up a hill. It is these little thin, like, fins that when the train goes over, it just speeds you up. But again, smooth, beautifully smooth.
Yeah, it's not as, like, forceful as, like, when the Hulk does it and it's very, like,
yeah,
whoosh.
Yeah, no, it feels like you're accelerating in a motorbike. It's, you know, to go like that. I am wondering if this is the same tech that's used on Tron. I've never been on Tron. I never watched the video of Tron. I will see about that later down the line. Then, while going through a very fun and thrilling but not extreme track, Like, you can just enjoy it and kind of hoop and holler. I did read that you went backwards a little bit in the ride.
That's also on the warning sign, so I know Steph brought it up.
Oh, that's a good... Yeah, that's right. Like, so they let you know that.
Yeah.
So, but the great thing is that when you go backwards, you know, you're going down a different track, obviously, or you'd kill everyone like Roller Coaster Tycoon. And you go into this cave area where you see a centaur and all that stuff, and then the weeds that are coming down. I think it's called the Devil's Snare. I forget. I think that's what it's called, but I honestly don't remember exactly. And the coaster drops, like, because it grabs onto the coaster in the terms of the story of the attraction. You say a spell, it drops you, and you physically drop.
Yeah, that was the part that I think everybody was like, oh, what just happened?
Yeah, well, that's one way of saying it.
Yes, that is the name.
But you dropped about, what, 10 feet?
I honestly have no idea, but yeah, it felt like you dropped like a tower, like a drop, whoosh. Like,
well,
whoop.
Let's not, I don't well, think it was.
Yeah. Like one of the little like whoops.
Yeah, a little like 10 to 15 foot drop. Maybe it was a little more. And that's it. Then you start going again on this other track. That was just incredible.
Like I've never experienced a roller coaster like legit drop like that.
But the great thing was you would think hearing that you would freak out a little bit. But you know you're safe, you know, because you're on the ride. And it was just this reaction of, what the hell? The hell did they do that?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how does this all click into place?
And everything was smooth. Every track transition, whether it was when you were going backwards or that part, like, you never felt like that there was a transition. There was never, like, a pause. Like, you know how in Everest there's a long pause when you're going backwards for the track to flip. Even when you go into the Yeti Cave, there's the little pause for the track to flip back over. So it's
just seamless.
It was, like, seconds.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the two parts of the thing. So that I just didn't want to say that on the regular non-spoilery part of it. And then we're go back to our normal, like, hey, we're okay now. The only negative that I would say on the attraction itself is towards one of the animatronics. It's not the way that it looks. It's the, the blast-ended scroots, blah, 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 blah. You can see the base of that animatronic way too clearly. You should have really done some work to cover that up. I don't know if it's because you can't see it at night, so that was a thing. But it's not nighttime in Florida till 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
so I don't really think that's a good move. You can see the base of this animatronic so clearly that it kind of steals the look of the rest of it. Because also the Hagrid animatronic looks great.
Yeah.
But I think all the animatronics look great. You can see the base of this one way too clearly. And the fact that after that big drop, after everything that we'd experienced, that I even noticed that thing, that base, is kind of testament to how obvious it is.
Yeah.
So I wish that they would hide that up a little bit.
Yeah.
But beyond that, which is really nitpicky, because I just don't think many people will notice it, because they'll just be looking at the animatronic itself.
Yeah.
Because it's moving around. It's spinning around. It's, you know, very cool looking. Yeah. This is the coolest damn roller coaster in any of the parks right now. I love Everest. I absolutely love it. And I would say that Everest has more thrills.
Mm-hmm.
Like, both these attractions go backwards, but the portion of Everest that goes backwards, that makes my stomach feel like it's floating in like the best way possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has like a really nice drop after that whole going backwards part. It's got a great drop.
Yeah.
But the overall experience is just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it makes me really interested to see now what Disney puts out. I know Tron is like a copy-paste, which is fine. I'm interested to ride it because I don't know how often I would ever get to Shanghai to ride it a million times, so I'm glad.
Also, that's not an old ride.
No, no, no.
You know,
yeah,
that's a good part also, you know?
What did we found out it was, what, 2016? Oh, no, we just looked it up. Maybe 2010? I don't remember. We'll look it up in a second. So then it must have been 2016. That's definitely the thing that's in my head. But that and Guardians are both coming, and I'm really interested to see what they do with, 2016, Disneyland Shanghai. I'm interested to see how they do Guardians, because they've also touted that Guardians, the ride vehicles are also going to be unique and all this stuff. So it's like, okay, well, what do you do? Do you do that same kind of launch system? Do you do, I know they have it where like certain of the cars are going to like individually spin more than, this just makes me so interested. And the fact that now both of these parks are competing a little bit, at least in the roller coaster field, is really cool.
This makes me excited. It is, you do get a little frustrated though when you see Universal put forth this effort for this attraction.
Yeah.
And then you remember the last three that they put out. And you say to yourself, if you just kept that quality as the standard, which you should.
Yeah.
You would. The gap between, as much as I love Universal, there is a gap, a little bit of a gap between what they offer and what they offer at Disney, because there's a lot of attractions at Universal Studios specifically that I feel are complete throwaways. Mm. And then you see this come out and you just wonder, what is it? Is it just that you didn't, like, the budget didn't matter to spend on the other attractions? Because if they weren't, that's fine. Don't make them.
Mm.
Because no one's going on Fast and the Furious anymore.
We've run through that line.
Yeah.
Like there's no one there.
And we've gone on it to show other people how bad it is. And they're like, oh my God, that was terrible. I'm like, I know. Like, I don't understand how. Jimmy Fallon, we won't even bother on anymore, but there's no one waiting really for that.
Yeah. But what's interesting also to highlight, because you think, oh, okay, this is a really intricate ride, like it should have taken years. No, they closed Dueling Dragons in September of 2017. It is June 2019. That's less than two full years, albeit they didn't like redo an entire queue and things like that.
Yeah, they didn't crash out the whole queue, which definitely saved you a ton of time.
Because, you know, the whole building of that structure, but they definitely redid the entire track. So they tore down all of Dueling Dragons track and then redid this track, plus all the stuff that you have along the track with all the animatronics and all that technology.
And it was a new attraction, we're not going to say like every day has been smooth for this attraction so far. They've had a lot of delays. They've had a lot of closures while people are waiting online.
Especially because weather, yeah.
And the weather has definitely not helped. Yeah. Because while if you asked me 2 weeks ago, how's the weather? I'd say, well, it hasn't rained in forever. If you ask me now, I'd say, well, it should be raining any minute. For 10 minutes at a time.
No,
for hours at a time with lightning and thunder. So they've had some unfortunate timing with the weather and cracking this thing open. But hey, amusement parks, stop opening things in anywhere between June and September if it's outdoors.
Yeah.
Don't do it in October in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, they have to get all the kinks out of the system first and make sure that I don't want to ride this in 6 months and something doesn't work still.
Right.
You know, they avoided the Yeti of Forbidden Journey when the Whomping Willow ceased to womp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's whomping. It's been whomping every time that I've gone on it the last number of months. This almost feels like if one of those intricate parts doesn't work, the attraction doesn't work.
Yeah, because the intricate parts, I think, are the track. So, yeah, if the track doesn't work. Because, like, the animatronics, while some of them move, it's not to an extent where it's, like,
it's not.
It would prevent you from riding it or enjoying it.
It's not the key to the thing.
Yeah.
It's not the River Shaman.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Like, nowhere is there a River Shaman level animatronic here. Don't go looking for that. There's some good animatronics. They look really good, but they are not fluid moving in the way that the River Shaman or even Elsa in the Frozen Riverboat, whatever we call that, ride is. This is more just very facially well done, but you're going past them at such a speed.
Exactly, yeah.
That doing that level may have not really been necessary.
Yeah,
because
you're not spending that much time observing and everything like that.
Which, on the one thing of Kong that is very impressive, is the giant Kong head that you see at the conclusion of the ride, and they take their time there.
Yeah.
Like, you slowly roll through that, so you really get to look at it.
Yeah.
Where that's kind of unnecessary, because you're in the middle of thrills.
Yeah.
It felt like I was on the motorbike and I had the lap bar on me, but I tell you, I just felt like I was on a bike. Because you lean over, you hold on to it. There's nothing on your left, nothing on your right. There's nothing on your shoulders, but you're secure. You feel safe the whole time. And it felt so open and cool. I just loved it. Yeah. I cannot wait to ride it again. I cannot wait.
And that's what Tron's going to feel like. And I'm excited to experience this in that. I sat in the sidecar and it was great. It still was a fun, thrilling journey. I didn't feel like I lost out on any of like that roller coaster type thrill because I was in a sidecar. I did have like back support and stuff like that. So like that, but I didn't feel like closed in. And I think the coolest part of all of this was that you can hear a voice the entire time. It's like how you go on Space Mountain in Disneyland and you hear the music the entire time because the speakers are right behind your ears. Like this had speakers right in front of you.
Okay, so I wonder if I'm going to be able to hear it a little better because I didn't hear it as well. But yeah. I also have terrible hearing. When there's noise and stuff, my hearing is not good through years of concert going. So I don't know if that had something to do with it. But it also could have been with that I am 6'1". And my head is nowhere near a speaker.
Yeah, and the speaker on the in the sidecar was pretty setup. Big.
Like,
yeah.
I'm sitting on a motorbike, you know, seat, so I don't know really where my speaker was.
Yeah, I think it was near like the front handlebar area,
There's
but
no
I have
way
no
I
idea.
I would have heard it then. Yeah, that explains why I was never really that clear on what Hagrid was saying.
Yeah.
So I actually, even though I love that feeling, I am looking forward to riding it in the sidecar. To see if that makes any difference. Because I even have that issue with Epcot, with Spaceship Earth.
Mm.
My head is just a little too high for those speakers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I never really thought about
that. It shoots
into
my shoulders. I can't hear anything.
Huh.
Yeah.
And see me, I got Judy right in my ears.
There's a thing that, there's a part of me that just wants these attractions to give me a headphone jack.
Mm.
Or give me a Bluetooth option. To hook up to the audio, but then you have stuff flying out of people's ears and causing, like, it's never going to happen.
I mean, on Spaceship Earth, you can do that, but yeah, not on
Spaceship
on
Earth, you can do it. And that's more what I'm referring to.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
Like on those slow rollers, I think you can do it. And you would never want to share headphones with the masses
else.
Of humanity.
Yeah, no.
But
especially
anyways,
not in Florida.
That's just a tall guy thing. But I'm not even that tall compared to other people. Definitely try out the seat before you go through the queue. The queue is, the seat is out front. And there was a number of cast members who referred to it as a very different experience than other rides that we've had.
It's very true.
Now, I didn't see anyone turned away while we were there, and there were some dudes who were way bigger than me.
Because
and they were coming out of the thing. Because I feel like if you don't fit on the motorbike, you probably don't fit on most attractions.
Yeah, because like the motorbike is very open. So if you have like a wide issue, like you don't get in the sidecar, you go on the motorbike.
Like even if you had large legs, I wonder... You know, if anyone has tried to get on the attraction and wasn't able to, let me know what the discomfort was for you, because I'm curious of what it was.
Yeah, because even in the sidecar, like, it's not like how bad Mine Train is, where, like, if you're tall in Mine Train,
yeah,
like, yeah, it's squishy.
My knees are at the wall, you know, the front of the cart. Really,
like, the sidecar had some room, so if you were thin and tall, like, I think that it's still fine.
All right.
The wideness, I don't remember how much it hugged my bottom.
Your hips.
But I didn't even have that big of hips. So I couldn't even like really judge that way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm compact. What do you want from me?
I fit. But the thing is, like, I fit into the front seat of Space Mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that thing, that is maybe the limit of my comfort where I'm like, okay, this is fine, but we got to get out of here, this thing. Anyways, I cannot wait to go again. To go at night will be now the next goal. Unfortunately, I'm traveling the next 2 days, so... Wednesday night might be the night that I just go to Universal after some morning activity that we have to take care of and go to Universal and just wait.
Yeah, and we'll see when they get that virtual queue up, and that might even be even better to get onto it at night. And goodness, if that virtual queue really works, I would love if Disney World brought that around.
Almost as if that's how all attractions should be nowadays.
That would be great.
You get to virtual queue up once you're in the park.
Yeah, that would be really
great. It's MaxPass. Really, it's MaxPass without paying for it.
Yeah.
And it's open to everyone. Sign me up.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
We gotta start moving forward with these things. From cons to these things, the whole, we have tech to avoid this stuff or to lessen the nightmares.
Yeah.
We gotta start growing up in these parks. Talking to you, Galaxy's Edge and Walt Disney World.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was Hagrid's.
Hagrid.
Awesome. Let's switch gears. Now we'll go on to our Disney Pixar kick. A movie is coming out at the end of this week, the 21st. We have our fourth installment in the Toy Story series. Now, many of you are asking, why did they make a fourth one? The third one ended so perfectly. And that was, I think, a pretty much universal thought for a lot of people. You know, the third one ended, there was such closure, you know, Andy moved on. It was so perfect that then you hear that they want to do a fourth one and you're like, well, why? Do we need it? Like, I enjoy these characters. Like, I maybe want to know some more stories, but do we need it? Especially in that line where we were getting Cars 3, Incredibles 2.
Cars 3 was great. Incredibles 2 was great.
No, but I'm saying, like, we were just hearing sequel after sequel being announced, and we were like, stop, please. I'm sequeled out.
Okay, but I also, you know, I'm going to do this because I cannot let that phrase go by. What movie do you need?
I need.
That's what I'm saying, though. All I really of them. People need to stop saying that because that statement makes no sense.
I needed
because
Coco.
You have most of. We have no idea what movie we need.
I need.
You don't need any movie. There are plenty of movies that have come out that people have loved that they didn't walk around going, I really need this movie. Like, that's just a silly.
I mean, it depends on the movie. It depends on the person because also, like, some stories are needed to be told. Some things are needed to be, you know, aired. I mean, whether if it's a Pixar one, that might be a different story. But there are things that are needed. Like, I think Coco was needed because you've never really had that type of cultural, you know, movie being up there. So it was nice to have
that on screen.
But there's
a million different things they could have done with that. The specific thing of Coco was that they found a story that really worked.
Yes.
This whole thing of, like, they should only make things that I deem needed.
No.
It's just insane. I just can't get along with it.
It's just an interesting thing because, again, it was in that slew of all the other sequels that were being announced. And, again, Toy Story 3 had a very, you know, perfect, you know, ending where
yes.
It didn't feel like you wanted any more.
But I think this is where we all made the mistake. And you actually said it. Like, and I did the same thing. It had a perfect ending. For Andy.
That's very true.
Not for the title of the movie, which is Toy Story. And I think we all made that mistake.
And I think that mistake is also highlighted in this fourth one.
That's exactly the point. That's the thing. Is like, they take that. I don't want to say like a bunch of people made it, like we all misread the end of the movie. But we sort of overlooked something where it is this like great bookmark to the story of Andy.
Yeah.
And his relationship to these toys, but the whole point of the toys is that they move on to bring happiness to another child. So while we were all like, oh, it's perfectly bow-tied, the story of those toys is nowhere near over.
And I think that that's like the big part. And I think that's the big part that one of the characters, specifically Woody, always kind of... Because a lot of the times we're seeing things from Woody's perspective, we were kind of led down the thing of he's Andy's toys. We're always experiencing Andy's story. So, like, to now be like, oh, okay, yeah, no, you're still with these toys. It's still the toys' story. They just have a different kid. That really kind of been like, oh, okay, yeah, of course. Because these toys are not necessarily
this is,
like...
This is the story of Woody.
Yeah, this is...
This is Woody's story. The toys, Woody and Buzz. Yeah. All I would say in the last couple of movies, it's definitely felt more like Woody and Buzz's... He's there. He's one of the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Where the first Toy Story, that was a Woody and Buzz movie.
Yeah.
The second one, very, very Woody-focused. The third one, same thing. Because, you know, they do the whole... Spanish Buzz thing where he isn't Buzz for a good portion of the movie, like our Buzz, quote unquote. And then this one also is very Woody focused. It's Woody's story.
Yeah.
And it's so Woody learning. Sticks to the title, Toy Story. It's not Andy's story or Bonnie's story. It's Toy Story. And I as the movie like progressed, I was like, man, I really read the ending of Toy Story 3 wrong because I took it as this. And I'm an imbecile for thinking that because the title of the movie tells me it's not that.
Yeah, I think we were just we were along the ride with Woody and always being focused on Andy and those type of adventures. So we were definitely in that mindset of Andy's our, you know, goal here. And, you know, now it doesn't have to be. Now it's the new kid. It's Bonnie. And it's Bonnie and her new cast of toys along with the ones that we've always had. And we're still trying to find out what happened. What happened to Bo Peep?
Oh, what happened? Well,
what happened to Bo Peep? Because honestly, like, I did not even realize that, like, I knew she wasn't in three, but I didn't realize that she was in two. Because, like, again, we're so focused on Andy's toys, and she really became Molly's. So, like, while
she always was.
Yeah. It was kind of like, you know, while she was there, she wasn't part of, like, the Andy's
crew. She was in
the
girl dorm.
Yeah.
You know, the toys are in the boys' dorm, sort of the way I always kind of thought of it, actually. So we're not going to go into spoilers on this because it hasn't even come out yet. We still got a couple more days, and then obviously, you know, it's a little early to do that. But great thing is, I think we can talk about this without getting into spoilers at all. And my first, I'm going to say right now, I think this is actually phenomenal. This movie's actually really phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's a great fourth piece to the story. I will say that it is a tying up of some elements of the Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest positive is I love Toy Story 3, but you felt... Remember that scene with the incinerator?
Yeah.
You had that feeling for two-thirds of that movie. Like, all of these things are about to burn. Like, you know, in different ways. Not, spit, like, not you know, literally.
Mm.
But, well, in the case of that one scene, yes. Mm-hmm. In this one, you don't get that, as I felt it, I put, you know, non-existing impending doom.
Yeah.
To, like, the whole thing where you're, like, you're clutching, waiting to just have your heart broken. That's not what this movie does. It's slightly a lighter fare.
Yeah, I would say it's much more lighthearted than I think at least the last two installments in Toy Story, because there's definitely some heaviness in Jessie's tale.
Or Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah.
She'll do that to you.
Kills me. And even, you know, in Lotso, like, him being abandoned and replaced by his, you know, kid was heart-wrenching, and having to, like, you know, learn why he was the way he was because of his backstory. And then, like, the whole, you know, Andy leaving or bequeathing his toys to someone else. Like, it was very heavy. And this one, while there's
dead.
Some...
while
there, I know. Oh, while there's some, like, emotional beats, I didn't feel that heaviness that I felt with the other two.
Yeah. I will also say that this is the most cinematically presented Toy Story in the way that the lighting and the camera moves. This, I don't really know how to get into it without giving out specific scenes, but as much as I've always loved the Toy Story films, it never struck me visually in the way that Wall-E hit me, or Coco, you know, with the bridge.
Mm.
There's never been, like, that kind of thing with Toy Story. It was always just about, like, the characters in the story and, oh my God, look, they've got the Barbies. You know, it's always been stuff like that. This is just visually gorgeous and lush and moody, like, when it wants to be moody. The cinematography overall, which is weird because... there's no quote-unquote cinematographer on an animated movie on these films. They don't list one. But that just goes all to the director, who is Josh Cooley, who, just so you know, his previous credits were he was a writer on Inside Out. He was also the writer and director of the Inside Out-related short Riley's First Date. And he worked on storyboard and the art department for Cars 2, Up, Ratatouille, the original Cars, and the original The Incredibles. So he's, you know, he's basically grown up Pixar.
Yeah, like a lot of their stuff,
Yeah, he is like homegrown Pixar talent, and now absolutely nails it out of the park with this film. So the visual aesthetic of this film, I felt, was much more just cinematic than I felt in the other Toy Stories. Not insulting those movies at all, because I legitimately think it's the best trilogy below Lord of the Rings, like, of all time. So that was just... glorious to see, guys. Some of the visuals in this movie are just jaw-dropping. Beautiful.
Yeah, and I also love how far the technology has come to see how much the animation can pick up, how the smallest little details, you know, when you talk about, like, a cloth, and not only can you see the stitching, but even, like, if you've had, like, you know, dolls' clothes before, like, you know, like the satiny ones, and they get, like, little pulls in them and stuff like that, just, like, to have that and you can see that, It's insane that the technology has, like, not only can you see the stitching, because we were seeing that back when Up, you know, when you saw all his ties and the different fabrics, but now you're even seeing, like, the little wear and tear on those things, and it's just absolutely jaw-dropping what they can, you know, do with that style now.
I remember when we watched Cars 3 and they had the scene where they were driving through the woods.
Yes.
And your mind said, oh, it's photos. They took photos of this and then added the cars in. You found out, no, that wasn't what it is. There are scenes like that with rain and puddles and the light reflecting off of that are in this film that just look spectacular. They look photorealistic.
Yeah.
And Bo in particular, because the last time we saw Bo was Toy Story 2, which was seemingly generations ago visually when it comes to Pixar style.
Yeah, technology-wise.
And now seeing her in this and you're like, oh, you can hear and feel the porcelain.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really, really something. So you mentioned Toy Story 3 and the arc of Lotso.
Mm-hmm.
There's a character in this movie that when you're first introduced to it, you're like, oi, is this just Lotso 2.0?
The second trailer they put out where they kind of go into that character.
Oh, did they?
Saw it and I was like, oh, wait, are they doing Lotso again?
Yeah.
Like, I got really worried.
Yeah, so that was concerning to me when it first comes up in the movie. And to my absolute delight, they don't go in that direction at all. They give you many more avenues to go into this character's development and everything, which was very, very satisfying. And I'll also say, just towards the ending, I was worried. I was like, wait, are we just going to get the same ending in a sense as we got in Toy Story 3? But we don't, and we sort of do, but it's so very different. And it felt satisfying.
Yeah.
Which is a word that I've said a number of times recently with films that I've seen. But, you know, because there's been a lot of finales. I guess there's more towards like TV shows and stuff. But it felt very satisfying, the finale of this movie, without giving anything away.
Yeah. And I appreciated, you know, all that they did in this movie. I'm very interested, and I don't know if it'll ever come out, but I am interested to find out what the differences were.
You're never going to know.
I know. The only thing that we ever had gotten was, there was an interview with Rashida Jones from, I think, 2018, where she, when they had announced her and Will McCormick were leaving the story writing process for Toy Story 4. And, like, she just mentioned the fact that, you know, Pixar overall, you know, women and minority voices were very suppressed, and she couldn't really continue to support and be a part of it because she didn't feel like that, I guess, where she wanted or she saw the story going, it was being, I guess, you know, knocked down by the other, you know, people in the room. I'm very interested to see where that difference was, because I do feel like there are some interesting female characters. I don't think, you know, Bo in particular, like, they didn't make her the damsel in distress. You know, they didn't do the typical thing. And I'm really interested to see, like, what, I guess, more either she wanted or what the other vision was, because I do think, like, this doesn't feel like any of those movies where it was like, oh, there was a switch in writing or anything like that. There doesn't feel like there was
this feels smooth.
Yeah, so, like, I'm interested, and I know we'll never really know, but
no, you'll never know. It'll go into the vault of ideas where the Brenda Chapman's Brave is,
sure.
And you'll just never know. The other good thing about Bo is that they didn't go hard in the other direction, where she's just like this embittered, you know, woman.
Yeah, no, she just this is her life now. Like, and it was really cool, like, to have it, because there was not like the overcorrecting that we've been talking about a little bit, you know. So it was just like,
it gets close, because Bo doesn't seem to make any real mistakes in this movie. She kind of fumbles with one thing, but overall has the right approach to almost everything.
But I think it was
While Woody is the one who constantly steps over his own feet. But you can't have two fools. You can't have two people making constant mistakes. Also, again, this is Woody's arc.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
This is Woody's arc. And you just, that's what matters more.
Yeah.
Because we know so much about him.
Yeah.
Bo's arc happened kind of off screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, you don't need to be explained that. You know, they do a good enough thing of it in here. Woody's arc has always happened in front of us. He has always been a front-facing character where we see his flaws and him fixing those flaws. We don't need to spend 30 additional minutes on Bo when it's Woody's story.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. It's just not necessary.
I like that we didn't have to. We didn't have to, like, she, like, basically told him what happened, and, like, that was it. It was like, this is where I was.
We spend the same amount with that as we do with Duke Kaboom. you know, with Keanu Reeves' character, which is great in this. And he has this, like, emotional... this is a stupid pun. I didn't mean to do it. He has, like, an emotional hill he has to climb. Mm. And they don't overplay it. They don't keep going to it over and over and over. They do it once, and then he gets over it.
Yeah.
So that was great. I was very happy because that was another thing. I was like, oh, come on. I don't need to see him have the same fall over and over again. They don't do it.
Yeah, but of all the new characters, I'm going to say that Bunny and Ducky stole the show for sure.
Yep. Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key. What a shocker. They stole the movie. Who would have thought? Oh, everyone who knows Key and Peele.
Yeah.
They are the best comedy duo of my generation that I just love them.
Yeah.
Their timing with each other. I have no idea what they had in front of them script-wise.
I would love to
I'm
have
sure
seen
they
the
had
sea
a script, but
the...
I'm sure they also just let them go for a number of times. And, you know, if you've never watched the Key and Peele show, you really, really should.
Yeah, even the fake little, like, shorts or trailers or whatever that they did with Ducky and Bunny, you know, early on, just shows you the type of, you know, interactions that you're exposed to in this movie. And I think it's absolutely great. I love that they didn't even just use them, like, for a split second. Like, they gave them actual, you know, things to do and time in the movie. And it was just so much fun. I loved them.
And then towards another, you know, new character, Gabby. Mm. That's Christina Hendricks. And really, just a solid addition and has a full story within this film. Tony Hale's Forky, which was the big new thing that they introduced in the trailers. And of course, a lot of people made, this stupid character, you know, because you saw 30 seconds of them dancing in a circle. Absolutely phenomenal character. Fun.
Brings different lore to the idea of a toy and
terrifying ass lore to the beginning of a toy's life.
How
get into it. It's kind of terrifying.
Makes a toy.
The confusion. I don't know if they're trying to make a comment on gender confusion.
I mean, I know they have like the rainbow on the foot, and I know that is a very like.
It seems like there's a lot of elements where you're like, okay, I see where this is going.
Yeah.
You know, and then basically the character finds themselves through their own means.
Yeah, which is nice because it wasn't like initially it was trying to be forced upon them and it wasn't going well. And I'm so happy that there was just a conversation and it clicked and it was like, oh, this is who I am. And it was like, you know what? That's a really nice way to do it. Because obviously
I'm
the
sure
forcing...
someone's going to complain that it's never that easy, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
we get
I mean,
it.
It's
we
a
know.
90-minute movie or whatever.
Yeah,
like we
don't go looking to Toy Story for the lessons of the earth. That's a lesson.
I mean, it's still a kid's short movie. But again,
how
like...
How dare you? I do not think it is a kid's short movie, but sure.
Yeah, quote-unquote kids.
No, not quote-unquote. It is not. There's no quote-unquote in there.
I know, like, they said Pixar just says they don't make kids movies.
They
I
don't.
Understand
That's
that.
Why.
But, like,
except Cars 2.
Again, like, you can see it as a child's movie, but it is not. It has good, you know, messaging in it. So I think that, you know, the message that you receive, the message that is being portrayed was really, I think, well done. I'd love to, like, I'm going to be interested to see other people's points of view on it, but I thought it was well done.
Towards a Forky character, Tony Hale is very well known for Buster in Arrested Development. And I was actually talking with Panda before, John. And he actually did get to ask Tony Hale, like, was he based on Buster? And I was very happy that Tony Hale referenced the character that I actually think it's really based off of in more like idiosyncratic ways. And that's him and Veep.
Yeah, because he didn't have like Buster's voice, like.
Well, he doesn't really have, you know, I forget what his character's name is in Veep. He didn't really have his voice either, but it was the, I don't know, it was just the brushing of the hair thing just really made me think of that.
Yeah, because if I didn't know it was Tony Hale, I don't think I would have picked up on it because he does actually do a voice, which I think is actually good. Like, he does do a different, you know, voice for this. It's not just straight up like, oh, that's Tim Allen doing, you know, Buzz Lightyear kind of thing. Like,
well, I think Tim Allen puts on a really good voice in that too.
Yeah, but you know it's him. Like, that's the thing. Like,
I
this
think we
one,
know it's him now. I don't know.
I grew up watching Home Improvement stuff. I knew it was his voice.
Gary, that was his name in Veep. Guys, if you haven't seen Veep, Veep is really, really good. And wow, what an ending to that show. That's in. Unimaginable thing, the path that road that show takes. So good.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, I think Forky's a really phenomenal character, and this isn't the last Toy Story film.
That's what I was going to say.
You're all out of your minds. If anyone leaves the theater thinking, oh, well, now we're all done.
No.
No.
Because also, like, there are so many directions that the next couple of movies, I would say, could take. Because there are a lot of things that, you know, sections and areas, you know, it's kind of like how we have... It's going to be a bad analogy, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's almost like we have the Avengers, and then you get, like, the spinoff, like, little, like, you know, okay, now we have a Bucky and Falcon, you know, show. And then we have, you know, the Wanda and Vision. Like, there's pairings up, like, of certain people. And I think that, you know, there's other now directions that we can go with the next couple Toy Stories. And I think that's an interesting kind of... I'm interested to see what their next quote story is.
Pixar has already done that with, you know, doing the shorts, because all of these characters are so... This whole... cast is so perfect for a 5-minute short.
Mm-hmm, true.
I think that's where we'll see, like, a Ducky and Bunny thing again. Mm. Is a Pixar short that premieres on ABC or something like that.
Or so, they do have Disney Plus coming.
Well, yeah, or, you know, something like that. I don't, you know, who knows. Mm-hmm. I can see them going in a lot of directions going forward with this.
Yeah.
But it is a really just entertaining, fun tale that stays to the heart of the Toy Story tale, and it fits. And I'm pretty sure I saw Boo from Monsters Inc.
And there's a lot of little...
I really think that was her.
I think it was too. And there's a lot of little hidden things when you're in another certain location.
It's a Pixar movie. It's an Easter egg.
Yeah, like, you know, extravaganza. Hunt. Yeah. So I like finding those kind of things and pointing them out, and yeah. I want to go back and watch it again. Also, we didn't get to see the short that normally goes before these movies when we
True,
saw
yes,
it.
Yes, we did not see
so
that.
So I do want to go once again. I want to see the short, because honestly, their shorts, while their movies have been great, their shorts have been phenomenal. So I'm interested to see what the short is before this movie.
And just on a final note for Pixar, and I know we got a review to read.
Mm-hmm.
Mellifont Brooks. Cheryl Burnett and Carl Rhinoceros.
Very nice.
I'm not kidding. Those three legends are in this movie. And it just tickled me. It was the happiest moment when I heard that voice, that Mel Brooks voice. I was extremely happy. Just on two little negatives, if I had to give anything a negative.
Mm.
Everyone jumping out of the car at a certain point was like, all right, we get it.
But I think they also address that.
They do. A character addresses it and it's fine, but the lost toy plot, we can move on.
Yeah, we can stop doing that.
We can stop doing that. We've done the lost toy thing, I think, a lot. We can move on. And Buzz is definitely a backseat character a little bit more in this movie. Jesse is barely in it, but I never really felt these were Jesse. Toy Story 2 is a Jesse co-starring film where Woody and Buzz have always been like the franchise duo, as we were saying before, with Woody having a step above outside of that first movie where it's 50-50. But yeah, I just that's it. Those two absolute minor nitpicks in what I think is one of the best editions that Pixar has done. Very, very happy, very excited to see everyone watch this and enjoy it as much as I did.
Yeah. It was amazing. I'm very interested to see what, you know, everybody else thinks. We might do a little follow-up to this once I have some other people who have seen it. I know Courtney's planning on seeing it this weekend, or next weekend. So definitely interested to get some other people's thoughts. But I think if you are on the fence, this is definitely one to go see. I don't know who would be on the fence, but in case you were. I do think it's something to go see. And I do think it's worth the big screen because the visuals are absolutely amazing.
Oh yeah. This is a theater film.
Yeah.
Without question. This is a go to the theater movie.
Yeah. So on that note, that was Toy Story 4. That was Hagrid. So we covered Universal, Disney, and Pixar all in one show. Thank you guys for listening to us. Thank you guys for sticking with us. I know our schedule's been kind of crazy. It's going to be a little bit crazy also coming up in the next couple months. Pete and I might have some big news. I don't want to jinx anything yet. I don't think it can be jinxed, but just in case, I don't want to say it yet. But you guys will probably hear it if you follow us on Facebook or whatever. You'll know there's stuff going on. So our summer schedule is going to be a little crazy, but we have some stuff coming up. We obviously have Toy Story. There's Spider-Man coming up. So we'll definitely make time for at least those. We will have our Galaxy's Edge coverage at the end of August. We forgot about next August. We found out we got Star Wars Celebration dates. 2020. It's going to be in Anaheim. We're going to go. Star Wars Celebration is going to be the 27th to the 30th at the Anaheim Convention Center. We will be there 100% for that. Tickets go on sale.
Without a doubt.
Tickets go on sale the 21st, actually the same day Toy Story comes out in the movie theater.
Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific.
Yes. So make sure if you want to go, you grab your tickets. If you're on the fence about if you want to deal with Star Wars Celebration, know that the beginning half of that week, from the 23rd to the 26th, we are actually going to be in Disneyland. We're going to do a nice little Disneyland trip with a few of our friends. Maybe you'll be there with us and join us before we head into the whole Star Wars immersion of Star Wars Celebration, which I'm super excited about. This year was great with all the announcements. I'm super excited to see what they have announced lined up for just a year later, which is not their normal schedule. So I'm very interested. So yeah, if you are willing, if you want to go to the show, the celebration, make sure you get your tickets this Friday, June 21st, 9 a.m. Pacific time. That's 12 Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Okay, I think I said that right. And then we'll be kind of keeping an eye on what else they announce, and we're going to be there the first half for Disneyland. And I know we'll have at least one or two people joining us just for the Disneyland portion, which is going to be a whole load of fun because that park is a whole load of fun. Like I said before, we have a 5-star review from iTunes, pulling from iTunes. We have Snoozy S. She says, love. The kiddos and I love to listen together. Wonderful family fun, especially on long car rides. The brackets are the kiddos' favorites. We should have another bracket eventually at some point.
We have a bracket we want to do, but we just we have to do it with Mr. Ryan Wilson,
yes,
who is, you know, still just not feeling great right now. He's, you know, he's recovering right now, and as soon as he's up to it, then we will do a bracket. Until that, we will be holding it off.
On that bracket, but I have a couple other bracket ideas that maybe we can pop in or two. Maybe. I don't know. I'm getting head shakes. But before all that, after all that, whatever. We'll be around. We'll be here. Head over to the Facebook group, Disney Magic Hour. You can definitely follow us there. All our news, all our adventures. Also, Disney Magic Hour podcast on Instagram. I will definitely put some stuff up in the story. Yesterday, our story was all about Hagrid. We will have some more stuff popping up as the summer goes. We'll let you know what's going on. Head over to mei-travel.com. Make sure you book your magical adventure. Head over to Universal with all the Harry Potter magic that's going on. Head over to Disneyland with all of the Star Wars that's there. And then you can also head over to Disney World with all the Star Wars. Heck, go on a cruise. We're going to go on a cruise in February. We're going to go on a Marvel cruise, which is going to be a lot of fun. And eventually, maybe we'll head over to Alaska because I definitely want to get on the Wonder with that new New Orleans-themed lounge that they have announced to kind of fit in with the Tiana's Place Princess and the Frog theme. But that'll be down the line. Until then, everyone, have a wonderful week and enjoy the movies.